This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Glynis Board. We'll take a long walk through the woods this morning to learn a few things about the medicinal plants growing all around us.
So the main thing you want to look for is a semi-mature mixed hardwood forest. So, and then as far as below, you can look for indicator plants, trilliums, mayapples.
This is West Virginia Morning. This weekend's episode of Inside Appalachia features stories about exploring the forests throughout Appalachia. This morning, we'll hear an excerpt. Folks at the West Virginia Forest Farming Initiative are teaching residents how to raise native plants like ginseng, cohosh, and wild ramps on their own forested land as a source of income and as a way to preserve the forests. One of our Inside Appalachia Folkways reporters, Heather Nide, set out to learn more.
Ruby Daniels is committed to forest farming, cultivating plants under a forest canopy. She sees it as a way to help her community and give back to the land.
By conserving like endangered plants like ginseng or blue cohosh or black cohosh, false unicorn, all those things could be repopulated in this area that has been decimated by mountaintop removal, coal mining. That's kind of how I would like to work with the community and bring, you know, some type of way people can have an income.
Ruby is an agroforestry consultant at Sprouting Farms in Talcott, part of the West Virginia Forest Farming Initiative. She was born and raised in Maryland, but spent her summers at her grandmother's home in Beckley, West Virginia. It was there in her grandmother's kitchen that Ruby first started learning about native plants.
I was always hanging around her, and then I'd talk to her. You know, she would always say, the moon gotta be dark when you plant potatoes and onions. So that's a new moon. She was a moon planter. She planted by the moon. She just was so earthy.
Her grandmother inspired her to experiment with her own concoctions, even as a young child.
I was wild. I get like apple blossoms and just make up recipes. So I was making herbal baths before I knew that's what I was going to be. So she just let me do. And then, you know, once I got older and interested, I just talked to her. You know, it was always somebody in the black community that knew some type of remedy for something.
Ruby says her grandmother taught her how to prepare the herbs for use in teas and salves to treat all kinds of ailments. When she began working on a master's degree in therapeutic herbalism, she started connecting her grandmother's lessons with the science behind the folklore.
Definitely the education kind of gave support to what the old people were already doing. So it just gives you a deeper way of looking at it, you know, to figure out like, why is that good? Why do they say take black cohosh with postmenopausal symptoms? Why is that good? And then with being in school, I could see, oh, it works on a receptor in the brain, for, you know, and that it turns on and off.
Ruby says learning how to grow these plants through her work at Sprouting Farms is a way to honor her ancestors. She's a descendant of enslaved Africans brought to Virginia in the early 1600s. They brought with them a vast knowledge of herbal medicine, but weren't allowed to use it. In Virginia in the mid-1700s, enslaved people were forbidden to use herbs, a practice that was punishable by death, Ruby says. Now, when she makes teas or tinctures, she connects the science with the spirit.
I look at traditional things, I look at traditional remedies, and then I also just add the new scientific stuff. I also use spirit. I listen to my inner healer. Commonly, I might say, oh, this person might need peppermint. But when I really work with them, another herb is calling to me, and I add that. When it all comes together, that formula makes sense for them.
As part of her training in growing botanicals, Ruby is also working with the U Mountain Center in Hillsboro, West Virginia. The U, as it's known, grows popular botanicals like golden seal, ramps, and cohosh. Appalachians have been growing and selling these herbs and botanicals for generations, and the folks at the U are reviving this tradition in the 21st century. It offers seminars and hands-on training on how to cultivate these plants to build a forest farming business. And it's a good business. Mature golden seal root sells for up to $40 per pound, and demand is growing during the pandemic. Erica Marks is the used director. She says larger herbal manufacturers are looking for a stable supply chain.
It's very pragmatic because it is their supply. Their products depend on it.
She says the herbal companies want to assure their customers that the plants are from sustainable and verifiable sources. So part of the forest farming program at the U is teaching people how to become certified growers so they get a higher price for their crop. It starts with where to plant, says Will Lewis. He's the U's forest farming coordinator.
So the main thing you want to look for is a semi-mature mixed hardwood forest. So like this, where you got some older trees, the older the better. Preferably dominating tree species would be sugar maple. And then as far as below, you can look for indicator plants, trilliums, mayapples, the rattlesnake fern, or ginseng pointer, they call it.
Ginseng, golden seal, and other botanicals are calcium-loving plants. Sugar maples are an excellent source of the mineral.
Sugar maples' leaves have higher calcium, so every year when those leaves break down in the soil, it's kind of like a calcium fertilizer.
On a gentle slope just up the hill from the Ewes Lodge, 3-inch tall golden seal plants are spaced about 3 feet apart. The plants start as seeds closely planted together in nursery beds. After a couple years of growth, they're transferred to the forest, usually in the fall when sufficient rain has fallen to create a moist, loamy soil. Forest farming is an investment in time. Most of these plants take several years to flower and produce seeds. Erica Marks says finding a place to grow these plants can also be an issue in a state with a lot of privately owned forest land.
That is a nut we need to crack. How do we increase access for people who want to do this? And maybe there are leases they can work out with landowners. There are some pilot programs that Appalachian Sustainable Development is working on. How do we connect people with interest with good habitat?
Marks says the forest farming program at the U is still pretty new, so they get a lot of help from veteran botanical growers like Ed Daniels, no relation to Ruby Daniels. Ed is a master artist in the West Virginia Folklife Apprenticeship Program, and over the next year, he'll work with an apprentice passing on the skills he's acquired over a lifetime. He and his wife, Carol, own a forest farm near Pickens, West Virginia, and produce a variety of botanical oils, tinctures, and salves that they sell online and in some local stores. Of all the botanicals Ed grows on his farm, he's most passionate about ginseng. Now in his 50s, he's been a Sanger, or ginseng digger, for decades.
As a young kid, I grew up in a poor lifestyle. Ginseng was a way for me to earn money to get my school clothes and shoes and jeans and such. When I turned 15, I was like, boy, if I could get $500 or $600 at one time, I could get me a car.
Ed admits that desire for a car led him to take more of the wild ginseng than he should have. He says as he got older, he saw the effects of over-harvesting. Areas where he used to find wild ginseng were depleted. To atone for the mistakes of his youth, Ed says he plants about 70,000 ginseng seeds every year.
We have several different approaches here on our farm. I've got the raised beds that those roots, I put some big roots in. They're going to change because that's loose soil. But I'm going for big tops, big berries. Those are my seed producers. Now, the longevity guys that I'm going for character and medicinal, they're planted in the hard, compacted soil and they don't get very big.
Mature ginseng plants produce a tight cluster of bright red berries. After the berries ripen and fall off, the plant is left with a scar near the top of the root. Ed says the scar on a fresh root is proof the plant was harvested in season. That's important because ginseng can only be legally harvested in the fall. It's the most highly controlled botanical in West Virginia, and it's by far the most lucrative. Ed says in the current market, high-quality dried ginseng root can fetch up to $800 a pound. But he's also interested in what ginseng can do for those suffering from opioid abuse.
I'm treating 3 guys right now in the town that I live in who have suffered and are currently battling opioid addiction. Their doctors took them off, and they're using our CBD oil and the ginseng tinctures.
Ed says the ginseng is helping the men to wean themselves off of the opioid drugs. Ginseng has been used for thousands of years in traditional Chinese medicine to treat a variety of conditions, but there's only a handful of Western studies looking at the impact of ginseng on easing opioid withdrawal. Ed says he doesn't claim to know how it works, only that he's seen results.
It gives us a warm feeling when someone uses it for the first time and say 2 or 3 weeks later gives you a good testimony saying that what a change it's made in their life and comfort, and they're now able to sleep at night.
Ed says he's happy to pass on what he's learned over decades of growing botanicals. He sees it as a way to earn a living from the forest while preserving it for future generations. For Inside Appalachia, I'm Heather Nide.
To hear more stories about exploring the wild side and getting outdoors, listen to Inside Appalachia this Sunday at 7 a.m. and 6 p.m., or subscribe to the Inside Appalachia podcast so you can listen while you're walking through the woods. Renowned singer-songwriter Shawn Colvin marked the 30th anniversary of her landmark album Steady On with acoustic treatments of songs when she joined Mountain Stage last September. Our song of the week, Shotgun Down the Avalanche, is one of several songs from Steady On that was written by Colvin and the album's co-producer, John Leventhal.
Well, I'm riding shotgun down the avalanche. Tumbling and falling down the avalanche. Mountain of new falling snow, but I will raise up my voice into the void. You have left me nowhere to go. I love you so much, and it's so bizarre, a mystery that goes on and on. This is the best thing and the very most hard, and we don't get along. And after countless appeals, we keep spinning our wheels on this mountain of new falling snow. And so I let go the catch, and we are all. Shotgun down the
Shawn Colvin performing Shotgun Down the Avalanche live on Mountain Stage. To hear her full performance and more, tune in Friday and Saturday nights at 8 right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our Appalachia Health News Project is made possible with support from the Charleston Area Medical Center and Marshall Health. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Caitlin Tan, Jessica Lilly, Liz McCormick, Dave Mistich, Brittany Patterson, Eric Douglas, Corey Nollinger, Emily Allen, and Roxy Todd. Andrea Billups is our news director. I'm your host and producer, Glynis Board. This is West Virginia Morning.